Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with Antonio Brown. All right, yesterday, I let Marcellus Wiley,
that's right,
LeVar Arrington,
ooh, that is,
and James Harrison shout me down when I suggested that Raiders wide receiver Antonio Brown is in a class by himself as a diva, locker room cancer, and world-class headache. Take a look. AB's a tier one head case and diva. Sap is a tier two.
What? Tier two?
Tier two.
Is tier two worse?
No. AB is the ultimate. AB is the
ultimate.
AB's the ultimate head.
They tier one.
I can't go with him on that.
I say Sap is more.
No.
Keyshawn, my boy. Keyshawn is more.
I was about to say, Keyshawn has to be more than him.
More than AB.
Yes. He wrote a book as a rookie. Give me the damn ball.
What?
All right, today, if it pleases the court of public opinion, I'd like to present new evidence.
Oh, okay.
Your Honor, the prosecution has been made aware of comments stated in New York yesterday that perfectly illustrate just how much of a diva Antonio Brown is. The comments were spoken by none other than a former Pittsburgh teammate of Mr. Brown's and a known diva himself, Le'Veon Bell. Mm. If I may quote directly from the transcript, Mr. Bell said,
look at you.
Mr. Bell said, fighting for it. Him not showing up for practice. I don't really agree with that. All right?
All right, Judge Brown.
If I may continue, Mr. Bell further went on to compare his situation in New York to AB's situation in Oakland.
Uh-oh.
Here we go.
Bell said, I just wanted to have a new start. I haven't had any problems. There have been a lot of things going on with the Raiders. His feet, his helmet. I don't know everything that is going on, but I see what's on TV, what the articles are saying.
Snitch gang.
Surely the court can see Mr. Bell's sworn testimony in New York sheds a new light on what level of a diva Antonio Brown is. In my 30 years of covering the National Football League, I have never seen or heard of a former teammate, a known diva himself, publicly distance himself from an all-time great player. This is a sucker punch. Mr. Brown is on the other side of the country, and yet Mr. Bell finds it necessary to make sure no one connects him to Antonio Brown. That's how toxic AB is. Not even at the height of the Donovan McNabb-Terrell Owens feud did Mr. McNabb fire this kind of vicious shot at Mr. Owens. Yesterday, Mr. Wiley, Mr. Arrington, and Mr. Harrison besmirched the good name and the character of tier two divas such as Warren Sapp and Keyshawn Johnson. Mm. I sit here today more convinced than ever that Antonio Tavares Brown Sr. is the worst diva in the history of the NFL.
What?
Prosecution rests.
Oh, man. No, I object, Your Honor. I object, Your Honor.
That Photoshop is horrible.
I mean, stop it.
It totally drives the point home that you're trying to drive.
Oh,
I still disagree, though.
Oh, man. Are you kidding me right now? Your Honor, may I?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, floor is yours.
Room. Floor is yours.
First of all, I just want to call Le'Veon Bell out for what he just did and what his efforts are. He's trying to get immunity, Yana. He's turned state witness, Yana. He's trying to clear the air.
That's the worst type of deal.
Oh, he's trying to recalibrate in New York by saying, y'all want to look at me? Look over there. Mm. And what he's saying is not about AB, and it's really not even about Le'Veon. State witness. You know what it's about? This is the Pittsburgh Steelers way. This is how they do with all that in-friendly fire. Everybody shooting at each other. I'm not going to go there yet because I'm going to really dispute who's the biggest diva in the world. Biggest diva in the world, it's a long list of great ones. I told you, Keyshawn Johnson, man, that's my dog. He wrote the damn book on being
who
a diva.
Who tried to distance himself from me? Who tried?
Wayne Corbett?
This is not distancing yourself
Get
from
him.
Someone, okay? This right here is him disagreeing with the way that he's going about something. Just because we're friends, we were best friends at one time or whatever that may be, and we're cool now, it doesn't mean I have to agree with everything you say. I'm not your yes man. I'm not gonna be that. I'm gonna be your friend. I'm gonna give you the advice that your yes man is not gonna give you.
Yeah, we're
and when John Gruden was sitting there saying, hey, you got a lot of people in your ear, listen to me, I think that's what he's trying to say. It's, you got a lot of people in your ear that's just, yes, yes, listen to me. I'm gonna give you good advice. I'm gonna tell you what to do. He's not going and taking shots at AB, and he's just saying, I wanted a new start. My situation was different than what his situation was.
That sounds like a phone call to me, not a statement to reporters.
If you're getting an interview, if you're getting an interview right there and they're asking you a question.
You ain't never dealt with no question.
Yes. Well, I've dealt with questions.
Why not then?
Like, that's easy.
Why didn't he in this moment?
He wanted to clear the smoke.
I wanted a new start.
All this that's here, that he said,
hey, James,
is what's on the TV?
James, next time in practice, they need to pat him down, dog.
I know you can't touch him. Look, this is just a reset button he's trying to hit, and he's trying to deflect over there.
I mean, he's in the largest media.
How's he trying to deflect? Hard Knocks is on every week.
Yeah, and AB wasn't in it all the time.
What are you talking about? Pittsburgh, what was it, three times?
Now it is.
This one is.
But before, I mean, he's feeling the heat.
James Harrison crumbled under cross-examination. Go ahead, Lamar.
I swear to tell the truth, nothing but the truth. So help me God. When I look at this situation right here, I look at AB, and he is by far not the biggest diva. I gave further thought, and you put him up on there, but the most interesting diva of my generation that I could think about is T.O. And here's the problem.
Show me the teammate that came out of this.
There are plenty of them. Jeff Garcia probably lead the league.
Ask you, Douglas, about T.O. anytime you want to.
Let me clear this up by saying, diva is not necessarily a derogatory term. It could be used as an endearing term, just like the word that some of us use sometimes when not on camera. It can be an endearing term at times. You're acting like a diva. That doesn't mean that Mariah Carey's a bad person. I heard Celine Dion come up. There are names that come up that are associated with diva. That doesn't mean a cancer.
And there are some young ladies that it is a compliment that they're divas.
That is.
But in a football locker room, it's not a compliment.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I was in a locker room with primetime Deion Sanders.
Oh, don't even do that to
Prime
Deion.
Is a diva.
Prime is a diva, but he is not a cancer.
The act of being a cancer. It's just you going out there being a showman.
He's saying
a cancer is someone that's disrupting with
that's
your
right.
showmanship.
That's right.
When I think of a diva, I think of cancer and a locker room problem. This guy is the biggest locker room problem I've seen in the history of football. And the only reason why he's gotten away with it, he's immensely talented. And look, there have been other immensely talented, Jerry Rice and guys. There's all different degrees, and that's why it's tier two, tier three, tier four. This guy is at the top. He's on the Mount Rushmore of divas. When Le'Veon Bell is sitting there in New York with the option to mind his own damn business, but he takes shots?
It wasn't the option. You act like Le'Veon is just
like
sitting there comfortable.
He just came out and said, hey.
Yeah, you act like it was an option.
He didn't have an option to pass.
What are you talking about? Come on now.
This offseason, Le'Veon had some smoke, whether it was with upstairs and his value and Adam Gase in that situation or him walking through the airport. I guess he was running a little late for the flight. He decided to let us know how he really feeling. Like, and all of a sudden, you take that attention. And everybody's like, we want to see you in the preseason. He's like, I'm going to have to wait to the regular season. All of a sudden, boom, shots fired. Where'd that come from? Like, where did this come from if you're talking about intention? And Antonio Brown has not disturbed the locker room to the point of cancer. Last year, all this is unveiling now.
In Pittsburgh.
A mercenary can turn a gun on another mercenary, even if they was fighting on the same mercenary team. They hired guns. Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown are hired guns that aren't in Pittsburgh Steelers territory anymore. So now he's a mercenary for the Jets. He's a mercenary for the Oakland Raiders. And they can turn their guns on one another because mercenaries do not. Even if it is. Even if it is. Even if it is. They gone.
At the end of the day, I'll say, hey, AB, I think it's – I went on and said, you know what, I think it's time he give it up. The helmet things. That's not something that I wouldn't say to his face. It's not something that I haven't had discussions with AB before he left Pittsburgh that we sat at my house and talked about that was way worse than this. But for me to not give him the advice that I feel
it's
is right.
Perspective.
Right.
He's giving perspective.
It would be wrong. It would be wrong.
Did he lose his cell phone? Was there some reason this couldn't have been communicated face-to-face, FaceTime, text?
He was communicating it to the youth.
Cell phone.
They asked him a question.
And he has
he didn't come up there in the front thing and say, well, if he says no comment, now they're like, ooh, he has no comment on it.
All he's got to say.
I don't disagree with that.
No, I cannot disagree with that.
How can you not that?
You can't disagree with that.
Listen, listen.
They do that.
Listen, y'all the only three.
They will take it and play
y'all are the only three professional athletes up here.
I'm not a professional.
I'm the only writer up here. Journalist.
I wrote and for the Washington Post.
And so look, no, and so look.
You said no.
If AB, when Mark Furman said, they asked him a question, he said, I plead the fifth. You didn't go, ooh? If you say no comment, you pleading the fifth.
Drop that mic on this boy.
All AB had to say was,
drop the mic on you.
I'm a New York Jet. I got
Why would
own...
AB say that? He with Oakland.
No, I'm sorry. Le'Veon Bell. All Le'Veon Bell
had to say. Come on, y'all, get it together.
All Le'Veon Bell had to say is, I'm a New York Jet. That's some Oakland stuff. It's not my business. That's all he had to say. That's end of story.
I am still upset with the photo of Antonio Brown and the glitter shimmers falling down and his body on
Honest to goodness. When this to me, because Le'Veon had the option to pass, he couldn't resist because Le'Veon's mind is blown. Like, and most people's minds are blown. Like,
do you realize this dude really took a helmet? They have an option to pass.
Excuse me.
A lot of guys don't think they have an option to pass, asking or answering the question.
Come on, man.
You have to be there.
He's been in the lead too long.
It don't matter.
James, it's mind blowing that this guy.
No comment is worse than what he said.
No one in the history of football has ever taken a helmet issue and blown it up into this.
Okay,
nobody
said,
burns
really
up their feet,
agree with that.
Can't practice, and then
him
takes a helmet issue.
Fighting his helmet, not showing up for practice. I really don't agree
with
that.
Warren Sapp.
He didn't
Keyshawn
say, oh, he's
Johnson.
A bum, he's horrible, he's terrible, he's not the type of person I ever want to see or be around.
With Deion Sanders.
I'm not going to keep letting you talk because you're not saying the right things. Until you agree with me, we're not.
Objection.
Not
court out of order. What did I say? I ain't been in court in a minute.
Deion, all these people. Y'all
order in the court.
Order in the court.
Order in the court. I was about to say.
Let me ask you this.
Can we bring this down one notch?
Let me ask you this. Do you think Deion, Warren Sapp, Keyshawn Johnson would ever use the excuse of, oh, I don't like this helmet. I'm leaving practice.
Oh, wow. Was this rule in place when they played? Will you stop with those analogies that are not analogous? Let's talk about the fact that Warren Sapp and Keyshawn beefed it out. And how did I hear about it? I never played with them dudes. Oh, it got public. Oh, okay. So I was
right in the middle of that. I took sides with Warren Sapp. Keyshawn threatened to beat
me up. Obviously you're not taking sides right now. It sounds like you're taking sides right now with Le'Veon instead of being objective. I'm going to be objective. I thought you were the judge. Be objective. Oh, so are let me hear this again.
Come on, let's hear it.
Let's hear this again. Would you actually be objective?
Come on, Wick. Clean it up. Clean it up, Wick.
I'm very objective. Y'all keep dodging. Let me try another witness.
Okay, all right.
Let me try another.
Oh, he's going to come to me.
Warren Sapp. Deion Sanders, Keyshawn Johnson use a helmet as an excuse to leave their football team a couple of weeks before the start of the season?
The quick, short answer would be no.
Thank you.
It would be no.
That's my point. And that's why.
Quick and short. But, but there would be other things.
Show me where Deion Sanders or Warren Sapp or even Keyshawn Johnson did something where it just looked like, damn, they really don't want to play football.
No, I don't think that's the case.
Stick up for your boy T.O., who was doing the sit-up in the driveway with the helicopter on top.
That's because he wants to play.
So AB putting all this work outside of that.
I would have to agree.
He don't want to play.
I agree with that. Right. I disagree that he doesn't want to play.
So I don't want to play, but I'm going to go out here. I'm going to run. I'm going to lift. I'm going to do everything.
I'm going to burn up my feet. And then I'm going to skip out on practice because I really just don't want to practice.
You guys, I'm going to burn my feet up just
nobody compares to AB. Mm-mm. Nobody compares. We got a hung jury, but trust me, I'm right. Coming up.
Hey, guys. Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. If you like what you hear, you should take a minute to check out the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, hosted by The Herd's very own Joy Taylor. On the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, you'll tap into a different take on the world of sports. Joy will break down all the biggest stories from the NFL, NBA, culture, in and out of sports, and everything in between. So subscribe now for a weekly episode of Maybe I'm Crazy every Tuesday night on your favorite podcast platform. Now back to the show.
James Harrison and LeVar Arrington are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to the Cowboys, who have taken the drama over their stars' new contracts to a new level this week. Jerry Jones already made some pretty pointed comments about Dak and Zeke's negotiations. And now his son, Stephen, has decided to call out the stars' agents and their intentions, saying, quote, "I have a lot of respect for most agents. I really do. I think they're trying to do their jobs for these players. But I do think sometimes they don't have the same end game that maybe the players should and we do." Completely agree with Stephen Jones here. He's finally said what I've been saying about Dak Prescott. Todd France, the agent, has a different end game than what's in the best interest of Dak Prescott. The question is, who agent do you think Jones has a bigger problem with, Dak or Zeke? Obviously, I think it's Dak.
You're right there. He nailed it about agents. And not entirely the entire agency and what they represent, but there are a large portion of them that all of a sudden you can see the incentives may differ from the player, from the team, and obviously the agent. With that said, he's talking to Zeke's agent right now, bro. Oh, yeah, yeah. He like, excuse me, Dougie Fresh. You got 2 years left on your deal, man. Can you chill? You know, me and you, we got some history together. Mm-hmm. I know where the bodies are buried. Mm-hmm. I took a fight with the commissioner. You know how costly that was in reputation and in dollars for you. Chill, big dog. And now you can't even take a joke? Oh, okay. Mm. And that's where we are right now. I'm telling you, they went from good cop to bad cop to both of them sheriffs right now, just looking at Zeke and Dak and saying, man, look, we are too invested into you guys. I've done too much cover for this situation for you guys to now treat me back this way. Yeah. Return the love.
I totally agree. I think he's talking to Zeke's agent, because if you really look at it, at the end of the day, he has 2 years left on his contract. You and your agent just upset Jerry Jones. It took him everything he had not to say what he really wanted to say in that last interview they did, okay? Now his son is coming out and saying what he's saying. Now, if I was in that position and I wanted to be vindictive and teach you a lesson, you got 2 years left on your contract. That means you got two more years with me. So, worst case scenario, I can make you sit out for 2 years. That's 2 years gone. And then on top of that, you only got two credited years. So now your exclusive rights was mean you would still belong to me. So I would have you again as a franchise player. And then I could still franchise tag you again. So, with that being said, I definitely think he's talking to Zeke's agent.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to give a different angle on this and disagree with both of you, even though I think you both had fine discussion points.
Thank you.
I'm going with the quarterback. And the reason why I'm going with Dak is, for certain, you need your quarterback in camp. He is in camp. You need him to participate. You need him to be present. All right? He touches the ball every single play. Ezekiel Elliott isn't going to touch the ball every single play. And when you have a quarterback that can lead the way that Dak has established himself as a leader, you don't want a contract situation to turn into the reason why his performances turn poor. And if you're looking at a number like $40 million, you're trying to justify giving me $40 million when most people would say conventional wisdom says, yes, you are a winner. Yes, you have done a lot for this Dallas Cowboy franchise. But the reality of it is that we can look at a handful of guys. You might be on the tail end of the second hand in terms of really, really gifted, high-rated quarterbacks in this league. So stop asking for $40 million. Take this money that we're offering you right now and be the quarterback and be the leader of this Dallas Cowboys team and stop complaining. I'm talking to you, Dak. Don't let your agent sit here and ruin a golden opportunity. You are the quarterback of America's team. Now, I'm from Pittsburgh. I'm a fan of James. I'm a fan of the Steelers. Some people say it's the Steelers, but they say Dallas, right? So if Dallas is America's team, be the quarterback of America's team and accept the contract that we're giving you, and don't let your agent be the one that sabotages this situation.
And the reason why I agree with LeVar and why I'm on the position is just because Zeke is an elite talent. And so I think it's easier to understand his agent's point of view. Like, Rocky Arsenault or whatever, he represents the best running back in football in his mind. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Todd France does not represent the best quarterback in football. He doesn't represent a top 10 quarterback. And so let's deal with some reality here. Zeke's got, Dak has a long runway here, can make a lot of money. Zeke's window to make money is very short at that running back position. Running backs don't play until age 40 like the quarterbacks do. Mm-hmm. I think he thinks Dak is getting the worst advice of the two.
And I think that's sad. That's a sad commentary if an agent is ruining Dak's ability to be able to continue to grow his brand.
Well, listen, the agent can only do what you allow him to do. Your agent is your buffer, okay? My agent is there to make me look good. He's to be the bad guy. Like, you're not supposed to come in and say, me and Zeke feel disrespected. True. No, I feel that was disrespectful to Zeke.
Good point.
You don't put me you take all the heat for me. That's your job.
That's
and
a
you
great
get
point.
Me as much money as I want. Then I'll agree to sign this. If he doesn't agree to sign this, if he tell him I want to sign this deal, the deal gets signed.
And to your point, it was a sad reality when I was in the league that the perception out there was that you work for your agent instead of the reality that they work for you. Indeed. So they have to follow lock and step with your wishes and desires. But I still say it's Zeke because when you talk about value, when you talk about, okay, you got 2 years remaining on your deal, you either could cash out, which it seems like your efforts are right now, or you can have equity. And we all know that equity can build and accrue as we go forward. And Jerry's just saying, how much equity do I have with you? I thought I had a lot more than this. And if this is the way you're going to respond, okay, I have a deal for you. But it's not the deal you desire. But guess what? This situation's not a deal I desire. You got 2 years minimum left with me. So that's where they are at that impasse.
All right, Darnell, did we miss anything?
Yeah, looks like we got a pretty big update on Zeke Elliott's contract talks. Earlier today, Ed Werder tweeted out, quote, the most recent offer in negotiations between holdout Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys came from the team. Elliott has been offered a contract, making him one of the NFL's two highest paid running backs. That would suggest team offering more than Le'Veon Bell and less than Ty Gurley. Want to ask you guys, should Zeke take the deal?
Yep. If they're offering him just a hair less than Todd Gurley, I think you take that deal when you got 2 years left, you got the baggage of your suspensions and things like that. That's a fair offer.
No, it's not. It's impossible if I'm Ezekiel Elliott to sign this deal. One, immediately I see this deal as less than. Less than someone who already got paid. And guess what's going to happen as soon as I sign on the dotted line? I'm going to get leapfrogged, and we'll be right back in this situation. Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, you want to keep going? Okay. Anyway, so now I'm going to be sitting there at top five before I blink. And then we'll be right back here, Jerry. My ego needs the headline, because I was in this situation before.
I'm going to tell you
before.
Right now, man.
Hold on, big dog. Your ego needs the headline of, I did this. I'm the highest paid running back, even if it's for 5 seconds, just because I am the best running back. I need that to be sold.
Don't be
to
led by your ego.
Yeah, don't let that happen. Bird in the hand's worth two in the bush. Indeed. Right now,
Is he the best back?
He has 2 years. I believe he's one of them. He has 2 years left on his contract.
Right.
Dude. I can still have you be mine for another 2 years if you don't want to sign. Is he going to sit out 2 years, not play ball, and think he's going to come in and be the second highest paid running back?
No.
Okay, take the deal.
Okay.
I hate best back terminology, by the way, sometimes, because there are different back. Just like I hate the terminology of best this or best that. The bottom line is, I could argue Le'Veon Bell is the best back now that he's back. The best back in the league is now back playing football again. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is that now, if Zeke wants to have more money and be the highest paid running back in the league, you stayed out this long, wait it out. Play your hand.
Yeah, I respect that. That's
play
how I usually
hand.
Feel, except with the cap
hand.
Inflation and the fact that other guys are coming to leapfrog you. How are you going to really sit still on this deal? And it's already less than what you should get if you were up.
I say take it if I'm number two. If I become number two highest paid, I say take it and get back with your team. But in reality, you've played it this long. And let's not lose sight of the fact that this is a part of the institution of the National Football League. sometimes veterans will pull a vet move and play out the contract negotiation, knowing that they're going to take the deal that's on the table, knowing that they have enough value, and they just do not want to participate in the preseason festivities. That could be as big as this whole thing is.
James Harrison is back with us. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Mark Slareth.
Yeah.
Let's move to Pittsburgh, where the Steelers are looking for a fresh start this year after a tumultuous season that led to the departure of Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. But one Steelers legend, Rod Woodson, doesn't put all the blame for the team's drama on their departed divas. Woodson said he thinks Big Ben needs to take more responsibility when things go wrong, and had an even stronger message for Mike Tomlin, saying, quote, "The only thing I would like to see him do more is have a little more thumbs down on his players. It's like having 53 teenagers. If you got 53 teenagers, you're not gonna let your teenagers just run the roost in your house. If they do something wrong, you have to discipline them in some type of manner to catch their attention." All right, Marcellus, we'll start with you. Whose leadership needs to improve the most, Big Ben or Mike Tomlin?
I'm just laughing at first. I'm glad the kids are now teenagers in Pittsburgh. They're maturing before our eyes this entire offseason. Amazing. Y'all crazy out there. It's Big Ben. It's obvious. Because no matter what Mike Tomlin creates in terms of culture, it's all about the enforcers. It's all about day one at practice. It's all about the team leaders, whether you're the best player or you're a guy that everyone just gravitates towards. When you go out there and put your work in, that's the guy who's the enforcer. We all know what Belichick and his greatness because of Tom Brady enforcing this Patriot way. You go to other sports, you see it, Tim Duncan, Popovich, you see even with Steve Kerr and Steph Curry. I saw it personally with Junior Seau. The dude had the talent of being a Hall of Famer as he is and one of the greatest linebackers ever, but had the mindset of the 53rd man just trying to make it. And when you see that in leadership and in action, all of a sudden everyone falls in line. That's not happening in Pittsburgh, and I think it starts at the top, and the top on the field is Big Ben.
No, it starts at the top with Mike. He has to be the one that sets an example so everyone can see that this is how I'm going to deal with this person, and this person is at this level. So if I'm dealing with that person and they're such a high level, you know I'm going to deal with you the same way. He has had the most prolific offense over the last whatever 2-3 years that he's been there. And they haven't done what they should have done, or we hadn't done what we should have done. Right now, he has built a defense that right now, I think last year they ended up 6th, number one in sacks. Mm-hmm. That defense is comprised of nothing but first and second rounders, and right now guys that he has brought in. So he has exactly what he wants. I think it's only two guys on that defense that are outside of the second round. One is Javon Hargrave, who actually had 8 sacks last year, and the other is Vince Williams. So right now, he has to coach and get everything, all the potential out of his players that he has and get them to go out there and perform. That's what I feel.
I'm with you on the Mike Tomlin aspect. I think both need to increase their leadership, but you have to hold guys accountable. When you're the head coach, you have to hold guys accountable. The responsibility of the quarterback is to deflect 100% of the credit when things go well and accept 100% of the blame mm-hmm. when things go poorly. Ben Roethlisberger is one of those guys, or has been one of those guys. I'll admit he did it. And he's done it on his radio show. He's done that on his radio show.
I'll say this. He has done that on his radio show, and that's where the issues and the problems really start
off.
But right. In post meetings, in post interviews after games, he puts it all on his
show. That's nothing.
I get you.
That does nothing.
But what I'm saying is, like, the coaches that I played for, he blow somebody up on his radio show one time, and he get called in and say, if you ever do that again, like, mm-hmm. that you got to put your foot down as the head coach and say you cannot be that guy. And that to me is completely on Mike Tomlin.
Yes.
You've got to be better with your players. You've got to set a standard. And, you know, the culture is something that's worked on every day.
Yes.
In every organization. And you guys know I'm a big landscaper. Culture is like water, irrigation. And water will find the path of least resistance. So when your lawn, you're watering it, if you've got a high spot, the water will go around the high spot, and that high spot will be yellow. And for me, from a cultural standpoint in an organization, if you let things slide, culture finds the path of least resistance. What's easiest for me? I'm going to go that direction. That's on Mike Tomlin.
Boom.
I'm Boom. Going to give you a more personal analogy that fits for you. I think a head coach is the DJ. and the DJ controls the dance floor.
Damn right.
And there will be a best dancer that might make, no, we're gonna do the electric slide. Everybody come, we're gonna do the two-step. And Ben's the best dancer.
Yeah.
But the guy that sets the tone is the DJ. Mm. And that's Mike Tomlin, the head coach. Because, Marcel, does the DJ not control the dance floor? He controls the entire party.
He does, but I don't know what era you dancing in, because, boy, you showed your age with them dances. You up in, what the hell? 1985, the Roxy
I'm
or
52.
Something. Oh, no, respect. Look, I'm not in total saying it's on Ben. I say it's in conjunction. But I do know when there are 53 guys out there and the coaches said, this is what we do. We need someone to do it. And that responsibility and that accountability really comes from us doing this as a collective. But there is a head and there is a lead. Every team I've been on, whether it was me as the leader or someone else I looked up to, a Bruce Smith, a Junior Sal, they set the tone. No matter what we heard in meetings, when we went out there, the tone was set by those guys because their treatment and their connection to the culture and the organization was just different. You think the 53rd guy is going to sit there and say, you know what? Man, Ben's out here just getting it in and working hard, but I'm a chill. If Ben is making sure everyone is on the same playing field, everyone has to do it, and it's an easier task than if Tomlin just says it.
The head coach has to do that, man. The head coach has to do that. Because if everyone is not on the page, if I tell you to do something and I watch you do it, and you or I watch you not do it, I need to come to you and tell you, you need to do this.
How come there,
get it done.
But Big Dog, how come there wasn't a Browns way when Belichick was there, but there's a Patriots way? It's because he got somebody to finally say, I'm going to make sure.
The Patriot way is the Patriot way because Bill Belichick makes it the Patriot way.
But he was.
And Tom follows through with it.
Just the same dude that was in Cleveland.
Tom follows through with it.
You were
I was there, dude.
I've been told
by multiple Patriots players that Tom Brady will take a butt-chewing in a meeting from Bill Belichick. He is allowing himself.
He is not.
You just said it. Boom. He allows it.
Right.
But is Ben allowing that? Is a conversation that we're having right now.
But you've got to listen. As the head coach, you've got to demand it.
No, no. Because when your authority figure and Tolbert and others who are sitting there saying Ben is the guy, you don't have complete control of personnel, Tomlin.
So
guess what? They undermine his power.
As a head coach, he doesn't have the power that Ben has.
In your situation, you were in Pittsburgh, but I'm saying from this vantage point, Ben's a little too close to Tomlin.
If that was the case, when I was in Pittsburgh and I wasn't playing, I know for a fact Ben wanted me to play, but I didn't. So, obviously, the head man has all the power.
Don't do me like that. I don't know those details.
What are we talking
about? I don't know those details.
And you saying Ben has power.
No. But, Jay, that's a hell of a point. But I will say this, and you know better than all of us sitting here. I do think the Steelers front office has a culture that favors the players a tiny bit more than others. And they believe, hey, we've hired three coaches. We know these coaches, anybody that comes into our organization as a coach is gonna have success. They, I think, tend to value the players a little bit more than maybe other franchises.
He said Ben is in charge.
Maybe in previous,
this year.
You know, like, head coaches with maybe, not even Cowher. I couldn't say that, dude. I could not say that. The head coach is the guy.
I think their organizational structure is, hey, we're going to appoint you the head coach. We're going to empower you to be the head coach. Go be the head coach. Now, that's up to you. If you want to establish that power, I don't think they circumvent the power of the head coach.
No, I got to end with this. Kevin Colbert said there are 52 kids under Ben Roethlisberger. He didn't say, give him respect. 53 kids under Mike Tomlin. Come on, man. Right. You already know how this is working out there.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington is back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
Yeah, let's move to Jay-Z, whose deal with the NFL has been making a lot of waves the last couple of weeks. When it was first announced, TMZ reported that the deal included plans for Jay-Z to become an NFL owner down the road. But now, CBS Sports' Jason Lockenfor reports that the rumor is not true and that Jay-Z won't be an NFL owner anytime soon. I want to ask you guys, does this make you reassess your opinion on this NFL partnership?
No, not at all. Because when I heard the report originally about Jay-Z's fast track for NFL ownership, I didn't believe it. I said on this show originally, and again, I don't want to spend a lot of time debating, I don't believe Jay-Z's a billionaire yet. I believe part of this partnership is about elevating the brand and power of Roc Nation to try to make them a competitor for CAA and some of these other power agencies. And when that happens, in 5 to 7 years, I think that's the time frame for Jay-Z to perhaps explore NFL ownership. I stand by that. I didn't, when this story came out about him being fast-tracked for NFL ownership, I was like, what's the agenda here? Who leaked this out? Who's trying to dirty up and overshadow the partnership between him and the league instantly?
I don't have the answer to that, but I would give credence to the fact that he has put himself in position to be an owner, and he's on that fast track. So I disagree with this report, and I'm going to tell you why. Had a conversation maybe a week ago. Can't say anything about the sources. All I'm going to say is Jay-Z's deal, at its core, is an entertainment marketing deal. Now, people have to start to read behind the scenes. I understand everyone's not privy, so this is difficult. But remember, David Tepper, who's now the owner of the Carolina Panthers, bought it for $2.2 billion, had to sell his shares with the Pittsburgh Steelers. 5% of those shares were valued at $122 million. Boom. So now Jay-Z, this deal's been in the making for, they say, up to a year. So now David Tepper has his shares available. The Rooney family is sitting there saying, we're going to not redistribute these shares internally. There's going to be opportunity for other stakeholders. They just said this July 27th. And Jay-Z's deal just came within a month of that. What that means is there's an opportunity for Jay-Z to purchase a 5% stake potentially with the Pittsburgh Steelers at $122 million. So when people go out there and say, we're the black owners and Jay-Z ain't no owner, he can't get this situation. One, they have to understand how you become an owner. 30% cash day one. Mm. This is the Panthers that sold for $2.2 billion. That's almost $800 million. You got to come up on the side of your net worth before you're available. So if you look at the Forbes list of available black billionaires, who has $800 million minimum of side money to put to this situation? All that said, to dispel whatever's out there is, Jay-Z is in line. And I think in front of the line to get that 5% is something that fits his budget, which is $122 million.
It doesn't change my opinion on the whole Jay-Z thing. I think he's doing what he feels is best for societal issues and how he goes about handling them. There's a long laundry list of things that Jay-Z has done in defense and awareness raising for social injustices. For this to be clumped together and blurring the lines of what Jay-Z is really doing is really, to me, only propaganda that's trying to serve perpetuating what, you know, basically what the stereotypes of successful black people do, successful black men. Mm. And the reality of this for me is that if Jay-Z really was on the fast track to getting a NFL franchise, he doesn't have to use this as the way to gain that access.
Bingo.
Secondly, my second point to this is he doesn't have to be a billionaire to get the team. Dan Snyder wasn't a billionaire when he got the Washington Redskins, but Daniel Snyder had access to other people who could come in with him and do it. And I can guarantee you there is not one person more influential that owns a team in the National Football League than that man Sean Carter right there in this picture. So the reality of it is if he really wanted to put together a group to go get, like, let's not kid ourselves.
Here's what I'll push back,
though. It's the NFL.
Here's why. Marcellus, what you said is fascinating. The only thing I would disagree, I think it would be a bad play for Jay-Z to take 5% ownership in the NFL.
Why?
Because I think the better play is for him to come in as a big boy and a full partner, 51%, whatever, where he is really the shot caller. And I think that's in play for
him. But that hotel has no vacancy.
Who's
selling their team?
I get it. But that's why I believe this is a 5 to 7 year play. And in order for you to get in that club, there is a pledging, hazing, let's check you out, let's spend some weekends together, let's...
Respect.
But that's not what we're debating here. I think that's a very valid point.
Yeah, but let me push back on that.
Yeah.
David Tepper is the richest NFL owner at $11+ billion, former hedge fund guy. So he has more money than all these owners. I mean, you could look at all the billionaire owners, you're like, damn, that's number one. Now, Jay-Z is smart to follow the same footsteps that the richest NFL owner just did. He purchased 5% to become now majority owner of Carolina.
Why wouldn't Jay-Z do the same? David Tepper has the most money Jay-Z has the largest profile of any NFL owner, and brand is important to him. Perception is more important to him.
That's why I think they're pushing back on saying entertainment marketing and owner. They're saying, let's do one, step one, and step two. But I don't think it's as long as the process is 5 to 7 years. You got to remember that, why is it bad business for Jay-Z in terms of his reputation to go and
Brooklyn Nets.
The Brooklyn Nets thing was a hit.
And people will say it's another deal where you're not really in control. I believe 5 years is a fast track. I really do.
Okay.
And I think that's a good gestation process for Jay-Z to learn the business and all that. And I think his end game in 5 years should be 51%.
But I do not buy him lumping in and clumping in social justices and doing those actions with the NFL.
And I think that's why they pushed back this report.
And that's to me, that's the premise of the whole debate to begin with, is have we changed our opinion on him thinking that he's trying to become the owner of a franchise? And it has to be absolutely
not. But I think those things all work together. I think the social justice aspect and Jay-Z becoming an ownership partner in the NFL, those things all work
together. They may want that.
Stay around.
Why have the internship on the outside?
James Harrison and Mark Slareth are back. Let's move to Dak Prescott, who is still waiting on a massive new deal from the Cowboys, but might want to be careful what he wishes for. One former Cowboy who knows a little something about winning Super Bowls, Fox's own Daryl Johnston, offered an interesting observation that Dak might want to consider before signing a new deal, saying, quote, the 6 highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL last year weren't in the playoffs. None of them. If Dak can just get to a comfortable number where he looks at everything, I'm being paid well, I'm with a great group of guys that has a shot at this for 3 or 4 more years, that's what it's about. It's about winning championships. I think this is great advice. I think this is a part of what I've been saying, that there's going to become a Dak day where all of Jerry's guys start trying to tell Dak what his true contract value is. And I think Johnson's got the ball rolling here. Dak needs a whole team, and his best value is winning. Don't undermine that by trying to get overpaid.
First, we have to define what's most valuable to Dak Prescott. And no former player, no current player should project what that is to him. One of the things I didn't like about my existence when I was an NFL player is that everyone thought that we all had the same goal, same end game. I'm gonna try my butt off. I'm gonna do the best I can. My motivation is coming from within. But stop selling me that everything is about just winning a ring or nothing else matters. Because you know what? When I first picked up the ball, I didn't even think about a ring. I got sold that I need to care about the ring, but I was always sold on my efforts, our collaborative efforts, and more importantly, when I became a professional, what can I take from it? And I got that beat into my head my rookie year when we were playing your Denver Broncos and y'all were smashing on us. And I remember Shannon Sharp was out there and he was giving me the business, legally and illegally. They ain't call all the holding he was doing, but he was just getting me. And he's like, damn, young pup, stop tripping. It's all about the M&Ms, money and memories. Respect, Moose, for talking about the memories. But also let's respect the money angle, and Dak Prescott shouldn't get comfortable and take less just so that everyone could be sold on the same dream if his dream is different. I don't know that, but I'm not going to be guilty of what Moose just did. It project that on him.
I don't think he should take less money because of what Moose just said. I think he should take less money because his talent is not of that caliber that he should get that much money. You look at guys like Ben Roethlisberger. He has a 69.6 QBR. 5,100 yards, 34 touchdowns. Even Aaron Rodgers had a bad year last year. He still had 4,400 yards. Looking at Matt Ryan, 65 quarterback rating, almost 4,000 yards, 35 touchdowns. Kirk Cousins, dude, had 4,300 yards, 30 touchdowns. You know, so with that being said, Dak is at 55.2. He's dropped almost 20 points in his QBR since his rookie year. So, and he's never went over 4,000 yards. I think he's averaging maybe 24 touchdowns a year. For me, he needs to take less money because those guys that are getting paid that kind of money, that's their numbers. That's what they're putting up, and you haven't.
I just say whatever the value is, and all these guys, whether it's Drew Brees or Derek Carr making $25 million or Andrew Luck making $24 million, when they signed those deals, those were the top deals in the National Football League.
Bingo.
You're going to get what you're worth, essentially. And oftentimes at the quarterback position, you're going to be overvalued or you're going to be paid more than what your worth is. Here's what I don't like is I don't like when I hear a report of $30 million a year and I have no idea if that's real or fake money. Meaning, you can get a guy to $30 million a year if it's all completely backloaded.
Yeah,
that
right.
Contract doesn't mean anything. So when I hear a team say we offered him $30 million a year, and we all look at it and we put it into that perspective, like, well, he's not worth that. He's not as good as guys. Mm-hmm. So what if he's not worth it? That's what the market bears.
Thank you.
Well, it hasn't bared it yet. He thinks it is, but it hasn't yet. Okay. And Daryl Johnston, who's a member of the Cowboys family, clearly, I don't think he's speculating here. I'm sure he's got sources like, hey, Dak's being unreasonable here, and we're going to have to deconstruct some of this team. Again, now he may be buying the BS that they're selling, but that's he's operating off of what he's being told as a part of that Cowboy family. And Marcellus, Daryl Johnston isn't talking about Dak sacrificing money. He's saying
like giving up money is not sacrificing it?
No, what he's saying is, Dak, the Cowboys have a 401k for Super Bowl winning quarterbacks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's money you can make long after you're done if you play this right and have a Super Bowl on your resume here in Dallas, if you're part of a great team and dynasty. When you're done playing, you're still going to be making money off of what you did previously that's not available to other quarterbacks.
Even right now, I think he's close to, what, $9, $10 million in endorsements a year?
Off the field, yeah.
I'll stop with this. First of all, there's a max you could contribute to your 401k, and guess what? There ain't no max to how much I can make. Y'all stop with this. Y'all got to use these right examples. Two, don't give me advice, brother. That's something I already know, but somebody else just told me. Guess what? I already know what you're going to say with your comfortable get into line and take a few million. Dak Prescott has only made $2.7 million in his entire career with the second... Yeah, I'm going to say only. I'm keeping up with the Joneses, brother.
He's 25.
I'm sorry. I'm not keeping up with the Joneses. I'm keeping up with the Wentzes. $22.6 million in the same career, and I'm better than this dude in terms of numbers and metrics. Okay, we got to get over the Wentz hurdle. How do we get over it? If you know track and hurdles, you don't hop over them. You run over them smoothly. Jerry, stop playing. Carson Wentz is at 32. Give me a dollar more, and I'm out. We can leave this conversation. It's on Jerry.
Let me say one thing really quick. I'm gonna give you one name, okay?
Uh-huh.
On this whole long money, future, bet on yourself, give you a little bit less, and you know, we're gonna take care of you, you're gonna make endorsements for years. I'm gonna say one thing. Ryan Shazier.
Boom! Talk.
You get one hit and you're done.
Over.
And you know what, at this point, if he gets that one hit and he's done, and all that long money you're talking about, that's going to some other quarterback because he hasn't won it.
Boogie Cousins, Isaiah Thomas. Come on, man. I'm not waiting. And I'm not trying to hear y'all take this little comfortable deal.
He take this deal right now, though, and he take that hit. He got that guaranteed money coming, too, though.
Right. If he takes a deal right now, what a real deal. Not
a
Monopoly deal. Money deal.
Well, hold on.
Right. But they're saying it's 30. They offered him 30, but he wants more than that. If that's true, and it's obviously it's going to be a large amount of that guaranteed, wouldn't you want to say, you know what, let me take this before I go out here in this preseason
Kirk
game?
Cousins, I know Kirk Cousins. They kept coming out and calling him Kurt, and they kept saying, hey, this is the richest deal ever, and it was completely backloaded, and it was all, you know, to
be
all fake.
Kirk Cousins' money is guaranteed.
Yeah, fully.
I know. Now, I'm saying in Washington, it was 2 years in a row, they kept going, this is the largest contract ever, and he kept turning it down because it was all backloaded money.
And then he went out there and got 84 guaranteed.
And I'll say this. I think there's a lot of similarities between Kirk Cousins and Dak Prescott. Mm-hmm. And my position on Kirk Cousins was the exact, don't give him that money, Washington. Don't do it. Let somebody else make that mistake. And we'll see, which I don't believe will be true, if Dak ever hits the free agency market, he's not going to get the same kind of money as Kirk Cousins. Because I don't think he's as precise or as accomplished as a passer as Kirk Cousins.
Desperate times.
Who?
For desperate measure.
About over half the league when they're looking for a quarterback. Let me.
You know who's more? Most desperate franchise for a quarterback is, in my view.
Who's that?
It's John Elway and the Denver Broncos. That guy needs a quarterback to hit in the worst way.
Yeah. And Kubiak wanted to draft Dak Prescott.
And he could have had him in the third round.
Yeah, and you know what they decided to do?
What?
Get Paxton Lynch.
Okay, but let's say this.
Yeah.
If Dak Prescott's on the free agent market, John Elway ain't giving him $30 million a year. Period. End of story. There's only one team willing to do it. And it's the Cowboys.
You think he's giving him 30?
Hell no.
Okay.
But you know, okay. That's, but see, we always get surprised. Who saw Jalen Smith getting paid yesterday? That's the point. Like, stop talking about your forecast because the weatherman's wrong.
Jalen Smith's a baller.
Yes, right. He is, but who saw that deal coming? So the point is, Dak's
not
there.
A baller.
Dak is
when you're a baller, damn, you can get the surprising
are
contract.
You just saying the timing? You didn't see the timing, or are you saying the amount?
Both. No one saw that coming. No one said, I'm predicting Jalen Smith in this camp, except Jerry Jones leaked it out a week before. That said, if I'm Dak, I'm holding out for my proper value because I know if I wait the time, mm-hmm. someone's going to respect his value, whether it's right here.
What happened when I make you play this year out and draft me a quarterback in the first round?
We're going to see that value now.
Or a second round.
It's a roll of the dice.
Before we go.
Got to roll them dice.
I want to tip my hat to Michigan football coach Jim Harbaugh for publicly defending his fellow Michigan alum, Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins. Ross has been in the news of late because he supports President Trump, which has made Ross the target of a handful of NFL players who want to impose their point of view on the rest of the world. Now, obviously, it makes perfect sense for Harbaugh to support the Dolphins owner. Ross is the biggest financial supporter of the University of Michigan. In 2013, he gave $100 million to Michigan's athletic department. But given our current political climate, it still took a modicum of courage for Harbaugh to speak in favor of Ross. Here he is on a podcast talking about Ross.
So much Stephen Ross has done for so many and across so many different platforms, and now he's getting bashed. I even tweeted out a congratulations to Stephen Ross. Congratulations for being inducted into the
National Football Foundation.
National Football Foundation Hall of Fame. And I was getting backlash over that for congratulating him for that.
All right, Harbaugh has inspired me. I'm now going to make the most controversial statement I've ever made as a journalist, columnist, radio talk show host, and TV talk show host. Mm. Everyone watching at home, please sit down. Embrace yourself. Can I get a drum roll, please? All right, thank you. Being a Trump supporter does not make you a bigot or a person worthy of public scorn. Stephen Ross is no different from me or most of you watching at home. He's pragmatic. He has issues he prioritizes above others. Throughout the 1980s and 90s, I was a pretty ardent supporter of the Minister Louis Farrakhan. I went to hear his Savior's Day speeches in Chicago. Going to the Million Man March in 1995 is one of the greatest things I've ever done in my life. Farrakhan's rhetoric is angry and bigoted toward white people and Jews. I disagree with it and reject it. But there was a time in my life when I thought he was the only high-profile person who called on black men to take responsibility for our lives. I was and am attracted to that message. But no one can credibly argue that my behavior is bigoted or ever has been. That's Farrakhan's burden, not mine. Stephen Ross needs to be judged on the merits of his actions. He's empowered Chris Greer and Brian Flores to run the Dolphins as general manager and head coach. The athletic department Ross is financing at Michigan just hired longtime Miami assistant and Michigan alum Juwan Howard to be the head basketball coach. Guess who Michigan's athletic director is? Ward Manuel, another Michigan alum, and one of just a tiny handful of black athletic directors at the Division I level. Ross is financing his own personal social justice initiative called RISE, the Ross Initiative in Sports for Equality. Maybe it's all an elaborate smokescreen to cover up his real agenda. Well, if it is, I hope all bigots adopt his smokescreen strategy. Maybe that's why so many people on social media are against Ross. They're fearful white bigots will adopt Ross's smokescreen strategy and empower black men. or maybe Ross and other NFL owners are being unfairly smeared as bigots, as a political ploy, or to stop black men from working with their true allies. More Speak for Yourself after this. Whitlock and Wiley, Mark Slareth is back. Let's move to Cleveland. Sponsored by the Capital One Venture Card, what's in your wallet? Where the he said, she said over Baker Mayfield's comments in GQ, in which he questioned the Giants drafting quarterback Daniel Jones, continues. Baker doubled down on the claim. His words were taken out of context, explained that he defended himself because the alleged quotes reflected poorly on his character. He also added, quote, "If I have a problem with someone, I will say I have a problem with someone." That is true. Baker Mayfield's not afraid to put a name on it, which adds credibility to his contention that his comments were taken out of context. Question here is, respect Baker backpedaling here on the Daniel Jones criticism?
I really do. I really do, because we know he likes to smoke. And like you said, and coaches used to always say, if y'all gonna clown and criticize, names and numbers. Put it by the criticism that you're making. This is a guy who says, in his ego right now, this is amazing, because we all know he could be a guy that could put up the wall and just say, you know, I say what I said, take it at face value. But he cares, not just about football, not just about his teammates, but his teammates outside the locker room, which is the fraternity. And he's like, man, don't do this. Like, he, in his heart of hearts, is thinking, y'all are making me look like somebody I am not. I'll take all the heat from things that are authentic to me, but not this one. This was disingenuous in terms of how you put it out there in context, so I'm going to clear this up as best as possible. I respect it.
I don't think you can take it out of context. I mean, I don't think it's out of context. He said, I couldn't believe they took him. My mind was blown. You said it. It is what it is. I don't think there's full context to it. It could be a longer conversation, but I respect the fact that he reached out. I respect the fact that he said, hey, listen, man, whatever I said, you know, I didn't mean any harm by it. You know, I apologize for it, but I tell you what, the backpedal right now, he backpedals any faster, he can be playing free safety.
He's so
because
stupid.
he is rolling right now. I mean, he's just, I respect that the fact that when you screw something up, and I understand that things sometimes don't have full context to them when they get printed.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that before. So I totally understand that point. But I'm glad that he reached out and said, I'm sorry.
Here's what I will hope someone gets this to Baker, what I'm about to say. What he has to understand, and this is why people like Colin Cowherd, myself and others are like, hey, man, tone it down a little bit. Because if you become a lightning rod, like me, like Cowherd,
right,
like Marcellus, mm-hmm, in his comments about Jay-Z and Colin Kaepernick, when you become a lightning rod, people are going to take you out of context.
Yeah.
People are going to take your polarizing statements and start adding their spin on it. That's what lightning rod, and that's why it's good to be a lightning rod in these chairs. We're not NFL quarterbacks. When you become an NFL quarterback, it's not a lightning rod job. You don't want to be struck by lightning. You don't want that smoke constantly around you. And I'm just telling you, Baker, if you're going to keep talking and talking and talking and controversial, writers are going to take you out of context and put their spin on your comments, and you'll be backpedaling the rest of your career.
Right. They won't give you full context.
Yeah.
Like the writing, I mean, you're a journalist. You're not taking out of context, but it won't be in full context.
The only thing I'll say, Mark, because I'm a critic of the media.
Uh-huh.
Not everybody in the media is honest. And a lot of times people get taken out of context intentionally. Okay. And it happens. It's happened to me. Mm-hmm. It's happened. It's commonplace now in today's drama.
I was told when I was on the rise, when I was getting like all the media attention, and they were pointing them out, some of the big dogs on my team, like, not him, not him. He'll do you wrong. And it was accurate because I saw it occur. Context is not just physical. It's emotional. It could be just in terms of the trip. Right. So if you look at Daniel Jones and you're looking there in criticism and grading him, and you say, I can't believe they took him. That's one connotation, which is bad.
Yeah.
But what if you're taking it like I took it in shock? Like, I can't believe they took him. Boom,
That land's completely different, and that's the same thing that happened with Baker Mayfield. When he went number one overall, I was like, Baker Mayfield went number one overall. Glad I wasn't doing an interview, because somebody would take that and say, I'm going down with it, when I'm like, I didn't think they were going to go with him. I thought they were going to go with Sam Darnold or someone else. It's a damn shame, but that's how it goes.
Sometimes your words, your spoken words, when they get put on paper, are completely different. And I was joking around on a radio show in New York, and I was giving Eric Decker all kinds of grief on this radio show between me and this host. Eric wasn't there. It's the only time in this business, 19 years, where I've called up to apologize to somebody because the reporter, the newspaper, the Post, put it down, said they were, I mean, we were joking around, we were goofing around. They didn't say any of that. They gave no context to it, and it made me look like a complete and total jerk.
And so, Marcellus,
the one time I did it.
To further elaborate on your point, which was excellent, if Baker did say, man, I can't believe they took him number one, and then the reporter asked a follow-up, why? Oh, well, because, you know, he didn't win that much at Duke. Mm-hmm. You know, winning really mattered. Mm-hmm. Again, that's totally different than if there is no follow-up and he's like, man, they took him number one. He didn't win at Duke. Blah, blah.
Right.
Reporters do it all the time.
Yeah, and you're one of the top journalists, so you know the tricks of that trade. Yes. And look, I don't care how many media classes we take as active players and journalism 101, we have that once a year meeting.
Yeah, I can't believe. Hey, I can't believe they took him number one. Could be like, man, I'm so excited for him. I talked to him, like I threw with him at this camp or whatever. We came up together. Like you could be totally like geeked up for. I can't believe they took him. This is great. You know, he's a buddy of mine.
I love it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And again, I want to be clear. Clay Skipper, that wrote the story, maybe he got it all accurate. What I would just suggest to Baker is, if you're not a lightning rod, when people do exploitive things to you. In your words, people are less likely to believe you. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, Baker wouldn't say that. Right. But when the narrative is, oh, Baker would say that, people believe it. Uh-huh. And so I would just tone it down, play a little bit more, and let your play do the talking. Uncle Jimmy's off, still in Cabo with the blue M&M's.
Man, they melt.
Hopefully he'll be back Monday. All right, so let's get to a highlight from our discussion earlier about Jay-Z. I don't believe Jay-Z's a billionaire yet. I believe part of this partnership is about elevating the brand and power of Roc Nation.
Can't say anything about the sources. All I'm gonna say is Jay-Z's deal, at its core, is an entertainment marketing deal.
Wiley, any chance Jay-Z's new NFL deal has a bigger impact on society than even his musical career?
Yeah, I can say that there's a chance for that. One, everything he's doing that is inspirational in terms of this move to the entertainment marketing and potential ownership in the NFL is going to inspire others. So now you're going to have an army of people who's going to have a new mindset. And think about that mindset. One, it's not about how you start in life, because Jay-Z's start, obviously, you wouldn't forecast a billionaire ending. Two, the perseverance to go through everything he's been through. He's had his issues. But most importantly for me is how he took it from off the beaten path. I made conscious choices just to put myself in the percentages of making myself the best situation for me and my family. Jay-Z, he just did it his way, it seems like, man, and it's turning out to be fruitful.
I think it could have a much bigger impact, and part of that may be my bias. Jay-Z, I listen to his music in my headphones, not the biggest fan of his particular style. And again, that's a complicated, because I listen to his music.
Right.
Working out in my headphones. Mm-hmm. But, you know, do I prefer a Chuck D or somebody with a little bit deeper message than what Jay-Z? And so when I see Jay-Z make this transition here to NFL ownership, being a responsible person in terms of promoting some positivity in terms of criminal justice reform and just societal, this could be huge. And his story, from Marcy Parks projects to a real player in American society, it's like Joseph Kennedy, bootlegger, that ended up birthing these sons that became these powerful political figures. So yeah, I think it could be much bigger. All right, let's get to our approval rating for Jay-Z. I got him at a 20 job performance, and I'm talking about his role with the NFL.
Okay.
25 all-time greatest, you can't shake that.
Yes. 25?
too much cussing in his music, so I got him at a 9 in character. I can't stand the N-word all the time. Authenticity is a rapper. I can only go so high. Rappers, not the most authentic.
Yeah, I give him a go. Overall. I mean, he's a damn billionaire, dude, from the bottom. Yep. And all that, you got to give him love. What y'all think over there? Oh, barely
Dumpster
a goat.
Dumpster Fire won the Twitter poll?
Goat. He's a goat. No,
goat one. Status won. I'm
goat
sorry.
Goat by one. I won. Yeah, there you go. Jay-Z, right. Come on, man. That's Jay-Z, an hour right there.
I got no problem with that.